Hey everybody, Stu Smith here, and I am with myself today doing a tactical fitness report on my own, and I'm going to walk you through something that I think is a pretty important topic, especially if you have really been preparing yourself well for many months, maybe even more than a year, to go on to selection. I'm going to make this specific to Bud's selection. Because there are some things I have seen in the past that people have ruined their chances of getting two buds by either disqualifying themselves in the process or they postponed their initial time by 6 months or longer because they got hurt 6 months prior to getting into SEAL training. So, with that, I'm going to walk you through a little PowerPoint because sometimes a picture's worth a thousand words, and it'll keep me on track, and we will just share my screen here. All right, so one of my favorite pictures that's out of the Navy SEAL Museum down in Florida, but this one is called Tactical Athlete Training, Bud specific. And there's a fine line between mentally tough and stupid. Okay. So I am Stu Smith, for those of you who do not know me. Graduated Naval Academy in 91, former SEAL. I only did 8 years in the teams. After that, I've been working out and writing about it ever since. As a coach, fitness author. You know, write for military.com, my own website, stusmithfitness.com. I've had this program here in the Annapolis and Severna Park, Maryland area for almost 20 years now, actually a little more than 20 years, called the Heroes of Tomorrow, where I train people for free who want to serve in some fashion, military, law enforcement, firefighters, get some veterans in there too, police officers that want to become SWAT team. So it kind of is a little advanced on the level of fitness that show up here, but it's a lot of fun and pretty scalable. We've created some great programs out of that testing environment. So I kind of refer to it as my research and development arm of my training program, because if I'm going to write about training, I should be training a lot. And that keeps me busy. Pretty good. So with that, also been working summer seminar PT. For those of you who've maybe tried out the Naval Academy summer seminar in the last 20 years, you might have seen me doing some SEAL PT with you on a Tuesday morning in Annapolis, Maryland. And I've been the Spec Ops team coach there since 2008 as well, which is just a club of guys and gals who want to serve SEAL, EOD, Marine Corps, like that. All right, so I realized a few years ago, actually, that I've been doing this periodization type training since I got out of the military, because I really needed to create a new system of training that worked for me, that worked around some injuries that I had obtained during my time in service, but also in athletics as well. So I call this seasonal tactical fitness periodization, and it is a way to train. It's not the way to train. I'm going to walk you through the whole system and why it works for me and for many others that are on my system of training. And it adds some common sense approach to not just your training and getting good at everything, but also allows you to be on that right side of that border between mentally tough and stupid with some proper timed gut checks that will keep you in that compete mode, you know, so your top 15, 20% of the class, maybe even top 10% of the class, depending on your skill set as you come in. But it also keep you at that good enough section. And I want to explain what good enough is here in this presentation. So backwards. But periodization defined works as basically it's an organized approach to training. So if you have not heard of periodization, it is basically a fitness budget, if you want to look at it that way. So you don't just do everything all at once in a day, in a week, in a month. You have certain cycles that work well together, and it is the key to getting good at everything. I think tactical athletes need periodization just as much as your regular athlete. And think about the regular athlete. If you played football, what'd you do in the summer? Pre-season training, right? You got stronger. You worked on your power, worked on your speed and agility. Then you were in season and you started working on skill sets of, you know, doing the plays and the techniques of being a football player. And then, you know, you tried to maintain. It was a different training program in the weight room. And of course, during practices during the season, then you did preseason. And then postseason was lick your wounds and get back and get ready to play it again. So that's really what a periodization cycle is, if you think about it. So I'll explain it a little bit more in detail here. But anyway, we all come into this game with a certain type of history. And some of this is an athletic history. Some of it is not. Some of it is mixed in sports, and some is not. It might be other physical activities like hard labor work or martial arts and other challenging activities. So anyway, it's a diverse group, but typically it starts off like this is what comes into the SpecOps programming. You got starts young. Maybe you're a little league, Pop Warner, baseball, football, other sports, basketball, soccer, maybe swim team. Then you got into high school sports, maybe started lifting, maybe took the martial arts side, maybe did both, maybe did all three. And then if you were good enough, maybe you pumped it up a notch and got into college, did some other athletics there. Maybe got really big into martial arts with black belts being earned and things like that. Then you join the tactical professions, military, law enforcement, firefighting, maybe spec ops. And then you brought that history of preparing specifically for those training programs to your regular training. So you needed to work on strengths and weaknesses that you brought to the table so you could be good at everything specific to your selection as well as to your job itself. That is the evolution of the tactical athlete, right? So regardless of this job that you select, there is a transition that must occur in these tactical professions. The strength and power athlete typically needs more cardiovascular endurance, maybe even less mass if they're a really big power athlete and they're doing something that requires a lot of running and swimming, a lot of high rep calisthenics. Sometimes having that extra mass is not helpful at all. In fact, it can probably even cause you to have more problems when you're going through that problem or not even meet the standards in the first place. Endurance athlete. Typically these guys need more power, strength, mass. You know, they are kind of light. Upper body strength is pretty weak for most of them. I'm talking stereotypically here. Hybrid athletes, folks that play multiple sports, are usually coming into the ball game with fewer weaknesses, more strengths that were developed over time. You know, but they still may need a combination of flexibility, mobility, skills, and technique. They may need to learn how to swim, but they're great on land with both strength and power, speed, and agility, but also have some good cardiovascular endurance for timed run type level running. So I'm talking like 1.5 to 4 miles zone can be pretty fast. So with that, they all need specific and special focus on a new skill set, and work on their weaknesses, and then start not only getting to the training by crushing the PT test, those weaknesses that come with that, but also getting through the training with adding longer swims, longer runs, rucking, lifting, high rep calisthenics, and stuff like that. So how's making the transition and what is good enough? So let me break down the phases of tactical fitness for you real quick. First of all, phase one is getting to the training. You got to get past this PST, maybe into SOAS, to, if you're going the officer route, you have to pass phase one first. If you can't crush this PT test, you will not go any further. You won't meet the standards to get into the training. Good news is it's not that hard. If you put some time and you actually train specifically for this PT test of 500 yard swim, push-up, sit-up, pull-ups, and a mile and a half run, you can crush that thing relatively quickly. I've seen people come in with relatively no military calisthenic experience and, you know, shortly within less than a few months are crushing this thing. So that can happen. Phase two of tactical fitness, once you learn how to take this PT test and you can crush it on a, even on a bad day, you're still doing top 10% of your recruit class. You need to start focusing on getting through the training. Now, some of your prior athletic experiences may also be helpful in this. If, for instance, if you're a power athlete, you probably don't need to get stronger. You're probably going to be strong enough to handle boats and logs. However, you may need to get to be a better runner and a better swimmer for longer distances. So every week you have a 4-mile timed run. Every week you have a 2-mile swim with fins. Every week you have an obstacle course. And if you're a bigger guy, sometimes those are all challenging. If you're a smaller guy, high endurance level guy, those are the easy things, but you may need to specifically get a little stronger and focus your phase two training on strength and power while maintaining what you already are good enough at doing. Then there's tactical fitness phase three, and that's your team guy operator phase. Completely different set of training programs. You're not training to get through buds anymore. You're lifting more. You're working on your durability, working on some longevity. You're going to be doing some more mobility work than you probably did prior. Because eventually you will be older, longer than you are younger if you do this for a full career. And that's where phase three gets really important. And luckily, human performance programs within many of the special warfare programs throughout the military are really good at helping you do that and build overall human performance, not just for your job, but also for stress mitigation and just the challenges of not sleeping, doing night ops, and, you know, everything comes into focus when you talk about human performance at that level. So you got that going for you, but it will be different. All three of these phases are different, and that's what most people don't realize. All right, so Buds Prep scores. Let's just see here what is above average. I call good enough above average. When I say you're good enough at something, that means you don't need to focus a lot of your time trying to get better at doing it. All you really need to do is maintain that. So for instance, you know, when I say what's good enough on pushups, if you can do 80 to 100 in 2 minutes, great. That's perfect. 80 to 100 in 2 minutes for sit-ups, 20 plus on pull-ups. If you can do a 9 minute or even faster, you know, 28 minutes for the mile and a half, 28 minutes for the 4-mile timed run. Now notice what those are. That's a 6-minute mile for a shorter distance run. It's a 7-minute mile for a longer distance run. And it doesn't matter what program you're in. If you can do both those paces at certain distances, you will be solid. The 1,000 meter swim of fins, 1640. If you notice what that is, that's a swimming pool, swim with fins, which is going to be different than open water. But if you can maintain a yard per second or a meter per second in that swim, you will get 1640. That's two 500 yard swims at an 820 is 1640. So 500 yard seconds, 500 yards and 500 seconds, 1,000 yards and 1,000 seconds. Same thing. If you can maintain the pace with and without fins for 500 and 1,000, you are solid. That is good enough. And these are well below the minimum standard too. I think you have like 21 minutes, you know, for the 1,000 meter swim at a prep. And then you have 32 minutes for first phase at Buds for a 4 mile timed run. So you're 4 minutes faster. So when I say what that's good enough, where what I say that to is for people who are really good runners, but they're trying to get sub 24 on the 4 mile timed run. Hey, that's great. You'll be the number one guy in the class. But with that extra effort that you're putting into a 6 minute mile for 4 miles in boots and pants on the sand, is that worth you not being strong enough to handle the boats and logs? So there's this yin and yang you have to deal with whenever you try to go past good enough just to break records. I've seen swimmers do the same thing. You know, I've got 500 yard swims that, you know, people are trying to break in the, you know, at Buds with the 500 yard swim test, and they're trying to break 6 minutes. Why? You know, 8 minutes is good enough. You know, that's really is. You know, why don't you work on that mile and a half that you can't do under 10 minutes instead? You know, that's, or you break if you try to run over a mile and a half. That's another thing swimmers have a problem with. But everybody has a weakness. That I'm not picking on swimmers. Swimmers, runners, lifters, you know, everybody has a weakness when they go through this training program. And the thing that you have to do is be smart and understand you need to work on that weakness and not focus only on the things that you are good at to try to get great at just to win a 4 mile timed run when you break your shoulder on a, you know, 200 pound log. Okay. All right. Then, by the way, you should be, if you can get 70 minutes on a 2 mile swim, if you can get 10 minutes on a tread with no hands, with fins and without fins, I would highly recommend it. Now that's for the more calisthenics and cardio side. How about the strength and power numbers? Same deal. This is good enough. If you can go double digits on weighted pull-ups, if you can get 15 plus, that's really good. 10 to 15 on body weight bench press. So 200 pound guy, 200 pound body weight bench press, 10 to 15, really good. Deadlift, same thing, 1.5 to 2.0 body weight, 1 to 5 reps, solid deadlift there. So 200 pound guy being able to do 300 or 400 pound deadlift in that range, solid. That is good enough. You don't need a 600 pound deadlift going into this game, right? So shuttle run, if you can do a 300 yard shuttle run in under 60 seconds, that's really good, actually, close to 60 seconds. A shuttle run is 12, 25 meter run. So down and back 12 times or six times, but down and back six times, 25 yards down, 25 yards back. So 300 yards, standing broad jump. If you can do 90 inches, that's pretty darn good. You know, anything over 8 feet or 7 feet is pretty good. That's going to put you in the 84 inch range. You know, if you can go 90 plus, that's really good, but you definitely want to be jumping longer than your body weight. So if you can get a foot over your body height, sorry. That's really good. Squats, though they're not tested, being able to do your body weight or body weight and a half with squats, 5 reps or more, recommended. Lunges. This is kind of a awkward one to test, but you will be doing a lot of lunges when you're going through buds. And it typically will have a log on your chest while you do it with your boat crew. And if you can lunge with 40-pound sandbag like this for 400 meters without being sore for 2 days, that's good. So you got to get used to sand baby lunges. Hang cleans, you know, this is just one of those that just makes it a little bit more dynamic on your movements. If you can do close to your body weight, that's really good. You know, 75% of your body weight is sufficient. So let's say 200-pound guy being able to hang clean 150, that's solid for multiple reps, not just once. But if you can get your body weight for multiple reps, that's great. Rucking, 40 to 50 pounds in a 10 to 12 minute mile pace. So that's not a run, but it's not a walk either. So it's more of a shuffle. And if you can do that on soft sand, even better, because you will see that. So anyway, that's what I talk about when I talk about what is good enough. It may take some time to get good enough at all of these. And that's why I say be patient with your training, because, you know, a lot of these elements of fitness don't work well together. And let me just give you some of my lessons learned along this journey too. So I was a high school athlete, you know, was playing little league ball since I was 8 years old, you know, constantly playing sports every season, whatever that was, we were playing it. Then high school got there, played 3 sports every year in high school, tried to play college football in college. That didn't work out for me. That's a long story. But I wound up playing rugby for 3.5 years, which was a blast. I loved it. And it probably helped me transition a lot better from a non-running football player to a more of a hybrid running athlete, such as rugby, and still having to lift and be strong and do all that. Plus, there were several SEAL candidates always on that rugby team, and I saw through them what I needed to do. So that was a good visual for me to see, holy crap. So he works out before school, goes to school, then comes to rugby practice. And then on the way back to go study for the rest of the night, he hits a quick swim after rugby practice. So that's what I got to do. So that's what I started doing. And over the years, I got to be a better candidate to go into SEAL training. And that was my transition from a powerlifting football player that really thought long distance was anything over 100 meters into a spec ops guy, you know, and that took a couple of years. It really did. So then I went into the teams, and back then in the early 90s, there was nothing there. My high school football program had a better weight room and training facilities and coaches and staff than my SEAL team did. However, now it's completely different. Post 9/11, the world changed, and a lot of money has been spent into creating a human performance program in special warfare that would probably help many of the SEALs with typical pain, aches and pains of injury, because our training program was pretty much the hardest dude on the team would PT everybody, and we do gut checks pretty regularly. And most people were broken. I was truly broken by 27. And I came to the academy. That helped because I started training a little smarter, started creating this seasonal periodization training program that I'm on now, been on and been teaching for over 20 years. And it really what helped me was basically less running and more lifting for a cycle, not for the whole year, because I just needed a reset was all I needed. And I'll explain what that is. So here's what saved me when I was, you know, pretty much stress fractures in my legs, ankle surgery, lower back injury, shoulder injury, all before age of 30. And this helped a lot, because I would typically be redlined running, 25, maybe even 35 miles a week, year round, on top of lifting and high rep calisthenics. All of it was just mixed together. I was maintaining for a while there, and while you're young, you can do that. But you start mixing in long nights and sleeping, less, higher stress job requirements, not eating as well, maybe eating a lot of MREs for a significant amount of time. And next thing you know, you start exhibiting signs of overtraining, under recovery, and aches and pains start turning into injuries. And that's really what happened. And what I did is I figured, you know what, I need to just go back to square one. And I started doing the basic kind of bodybuilding style isolation workouts that I grew up with at 13 years old. Just kind of rebuilt myself, laid off running, just did more swimming and non-impact cardio, and dropped my miles down to about 10 miles a week instead of 25 and 35. And that was my winter lift cycle. And by spring, I was rebuilt. Now, I had to rebuild my running up, but I did it progressively. And this is the little bell curve that I created to kind of go throughout the whole year. So when I talk about I have a running program, this is it. This is what we just did this past winter. We were on the back end of that winter lift cycle, running a little bit less. And then we come back around to spring, and now we are starting to ramp up mileage per week at about a 15% per week progression. By the midsummer, maybe even late summer, we'll be up to 30 plus miles again. We hover up there for a couple of months, and then by early fall, maybe late fall, while the weather's really nice, we'll start ramping it down and start adding lifting again. So that is my cycle in a nutshell. And what we did is that's how we just took it to create tactical athletes. And once again, this is my way of doing this. It's not the only way of doing this. And if you look at that year-long cycle, basically that is what we call a macro cycle. It's 12 months long. That's our year. Every season is our mesocycle. Just getting technical with the periodization lingo. And our micro cycle is 3 to 4 weeks, what we kind of focus specifically on in that little smaller cycle. Now, I've also created another evolution of this and put a block periodization cycle in there, where even though we did a winter lift cycle these last 12 weeks, we broke up those 12 weeks into 3-1 blocks of training. So we did 3 weeks of strength training, followed by 1 week of calisthenics cardio. So we kind of took a deload week from strength for a week, but we used that deload week as more calisthenics cardio based training to help us maintain PT scores. And it was perfect. I just had the idea from reading some block periodization articles, and why people do that. It's just because sometimes you need it. You need that little break in the middle of a mesocycle to let you transition from what you've already done versus continue to burn yourself out for that strength cycle. And that little deload week, if you didn't have to keep up with a PT test, my recommendation would just take a deload week. Make it easy, not lift real heavy, maybe do some non-impact stuff and stretch out real well. Come back in and you're stronger the next 3 week cycle of training. So that's what we did. We just did it with PT test versus a deload, and it was significantly changed the way we went through this 12 week winter lift cycle. So 3 weeks strength, 1 week PT test, and or PT test week, calisthenics and cardio basically. And then we did another 3-to-1, and we did another 3-to-1. And by the third 3-to-1 ratio, people were not only stronger, but they either maintained their PT scores and run scores and swim scores, or some of them were even faster. We had a couple of PRs on the run in the middle of the winter, which was not something we had done in the past. So I'm all for this block periodization. I don't have a training program yet written with block periodization. That is what 2021 for me will be. I'm going to write two different programs. One, a strength training program with a PT maintenance cycle. And then I'll do another one with a PT and cardio program with a strength maintenance cycle. So the 3-to-1 ratio will still be used. One will just be in the spring. One will just be in the winter. And it's just a way to break up the spring winter cycle. If you're worried about losing some of your strength that you've put on in previous cycles, or you're worried about losing some of your cardio scores when you're going through a strength cycle, that has been game changing in our training this year. So here's what it looks like. Let me just break down each season for you. So winter months between November and February, we basically use this as a transition into weights. 3 months of strength training. Swimming is more. We do a lot more swimming with fins. Typically, we end a leg day with a good long swim with fin or ruck, especially if they're an Army guy. They don't need to swim. We'll just put a ruck on them and just let them get out there and do some load bearing. However, if they need to pull back from some of the impact, we'll put fins on them and, you know, let them get some good cardio with a pair of fins on. That's our leg days. On our non-leg days, we're swimming regular PT type 50-50 workouts and, you know, some hard freestyle workouts for conditioning purposes mainly. But we're really focused on strength, power, speed, agility. We do all types of shuttle runs and strength and power lifts, you know, your big three, from bench, squats, deadlifts, to some auxiliary exercises, shoulder presses, even bicep and overhead presses, and throw some hang cleans in there and kettlebell swings and all that too. So we still run, but we run less and we do less calisthenics. Typically, what we will do is we will lift more, but we will warm up with calisthenics for that body part being used. So push-ups is a great warm-up for bench press, and we'll run with a cool-down run somewhere in there, maybe some shorter, faster runs with some 400-meter intervals. But in the end, it came out to about 10 miles, maybe 15 miles a week of running. We did everything outside this winter, so it was helpful for us to run just to stay warm because we lost our gym due to COVID. But typical years, we're running a little bit less than we did this year. Okay, so spring between March and May, we transition into calisthenics. We have about we're about in a 50-50 groove of half of our exercises are weights, half of our exercises are calisthenics. We do a 2-to-3-month running progression until we hit the summer, focusing on endurance, muscle stamina, and maintaining our strength and speed with some supplemental lifts on the back end if you need it. If you don't need it, we'll focus more on cardio endurance. So, for instance, a typical person that would need to lift would be the endurance athlete, who probably doesn't need to work too much on endurance, but they still need to maintain their strength. We'll get some supplemental lifts in there for you. If you're a power athlete, football player, still needs to lose 30 pounds to be where he needs to be, you know, we just keep him out of the weight room altogether, maybe for a set or two, and then get them on the cardio machines for most of the workout. So once again, it depends on your strengths and weaknesses coming into this game. During the summer is our peak running cycle. You know, normally, you know, prior to, I'd say, me creating this system, this would be where I would run year round, unless I was broken, which I typically was. So we build up to a peak. Some years we build up to 30, Some years we build up to 40 miles. It just depends on the year and the group. And then we'll hover there for about a month, and then we'll start tapering down. But we give ourselves a good 12-week taper before we really go down to 10 or 15 miles a week. So we're over 6 months of the year, we're running pretty significantly. Maybe even more, probably closer to 9 months, to be honest with you. And the 3 months in the winter is about when it's at its least. But once again, our focus in the summer is endurance, muscle stamina peak, same for the volume of calisthenics. Still maintain strength and speed if you need it. But we typically, in a nutshell, we run more, PT more, and we lift a little less. The less is basically depends on what you really need to work on, right? People do get stronger in the summer, and they do get bigger in the summer, but that requires an exceptional amount of calories that need to be consumed so you don't lose everything. So if you're worried about losing your gains, which I hate, you know, when people do that, because typically they just don't want to get fast with cardiovascular endurance when they say that, you're going to lose some, but if you want to maintain it all, you just got to have to eat more. That's all it takes. You still need to run, still need to swim. You need to do all that cardio stuff if you want to do this job. But you still need to be strong too. And if you have to work to maintain that, you need to eat to maintain that as well. Some people can not lift weights for several months and still be 90% their 1RMs. That's just because they've come from a strength background and probably genetically wired to be really strong. Others aren't so lucky. You have to work for it. Same for cardio as well. So in the fall, which is also a fun time, we tend to, everybody's ready to start tapering down from the runs, and they go into more of a fewer repetitions of calisthenics, and we start mixing in weights with the system. So fall looks very similar to spring, just in a reverse progression. So we're getting less reps, less running in the fall, and we're putting in more weights, whereas in the spring, we're building up on runs and calisthenics and less weights. So it's just kind of the reverse transition. But in the spring and the fall both, there's still a lot of strength, power, speed, agility progressions that are occurring that are there, but we're also trying to maintain cardio as well. But we run less, PT less, lift and PT mix is kind of the combination we're looking for. All right, so what has evolved into a program featuring all elements of fitness? So once again, all elements fitness, let me just put this in a nutshell for you. Spring, summer, calisthenics, cardio cycles, calisthenics, running peaks, you know, progressive running PT program. That's what we do in the spring and summer. Fall and winter lift cycles are non-impact based. So we run a little bit less, but we still do cardio, just more swimming or biking. And rowing, a little bit less running. But we try to get strong. We really try to push it. And there's a picture of us lifting in the winter outdoors, trying to get strong. And it was fun. We warm up with calisthenics and we lift heavy, run a little bit less. So that's how we have evolved. But this is what you have to realize. You have to get good at all of these, especially before you go into a selection program, because any of these weaknesses will cause issue with your training, either you failing to meet the standard or you getting injured because it's an overuse injury because you didn't practice it enough. However, as the active duty operator, the key is actually longevity, so you can do this job that you love for a longer time without pain and injury. So there's some more elements that are occurring. So if you think about strength, power, speed, and agility, those four elements of fitness work really well together. That's why you see football players who are very strong and powerful and that are very fast and agile. they work really well together. You can do them all in one cycle. That's our winter lift cycle. We focus on those elements of fitness in the winter, fall and winter. The other one being aerobic conditioning, anaerobic conditioning, and muscle stamina. That's pretty much our spring and summer cycle. We focus on those because they work real well together. If you're an endurance athlete, you typically can build up your calisthenics really quickly. It may take you some time to build up your strength, but you can crush a PT test relatively quickly. I've seen guys that come in like cross-country runners within a few months are beating everybody in calisthenics where, you know, before they were just sucking on a pull-up bar. They could barely do pull-ups. But, you know, since they have a low body weight coming into it and they're fast and their muscles are designed for muscle stamina and cardiovascular endurance, they do really well in calisthenics tests. Strength athletes takes a little more time for that transition. However, look in the inside of that, you know, your work capacity is going to be more endurance based and muscle stamina based, whereas your durability is going to be more strength based. Both of those are very important to your ability to get through selection, but also to serve with longer injury-free time as well. Your durability and work capacity is going to make you an asset to any unit. On the bottom side, it's really about job skills, mindset, and recovery. Stress mitigation, in essence, is going to keep you mentally healthy. And be able to help you work off the catabolic effects of stress, which are, you know, can be chronic to the point where muscles don't grow, your sleep, irritability, all of that screwed up. So recovery is very important to understand, and how sleep, nutrition, mobility, flexibility all play a big part in you being able to recover from all the challenges that work is throwing at you. You know, physical stress, mental stress, emotional stress, all of that is very important into increasing your longevity. And then stability is really just you as an operator, your ability to pick up new skills quickly, your hand-eye coordination, just coordination to move, period. And of course, your mindset and your attitude. All these are very important as part of, you know, the big picture. And once again, the very center part of this is longevity. Longevity is tied into all of this as an operator. So, all right. So new methods of training. Let me just explain it to you a little bit. We did two tests this fall and winter. Went through basically our strength cycle, progressed into two 12-week cycles. So 12 weeks in the fall, 12 weeks in the winter. We started off at a 4-2 ratio. So we did 4 weeks of strength training, followed by 2 weeks of calisthenics and cardio. Now, when I started realizing doing the math, that was just two cycles. When we got to 12 weeks, that made 8 weeks of strength training, 4 weeks of PST maintenance. And I figured if we were doing a strength training, maybe we need more strength training. So during a strength training cycle, during the winter, we decided to go 3-1. That enabled us to do 9 weeks of strength training with 3 weeks of PST maintenance. And that combo worked better than the 4-2 combo. You know, I think both worked well, but I think everybody really was ready for that 1 week off every 3 weeks versus the 2 weeks off every 4 weeks. Seems like we didn't need the 2 weeks of calisthenics cardio, but we needed it faster than the fourth week. So if we could get it the fourth week, like with a 3-1 ratio, it seemed to work a little better. So that's why, you know, this block periodization in the winter works so well at a 3-1 ratio that helped us maintain strength or build strength as well as maintain and get faster at PST scores. So, you know, where you are right now, you know, at your phase one, phase two levels of tactical fitness, you still need to maintain a good PST score, but you also need to work on strength just to handle some of the elements of your selection that will require it. So this is how you do that, I think, most efficiently with this 3-to-1 block ratio. It yielded excellent results for all of us, even me at 52. So here's some lesson learned, just a real quick, and it depends on who you are. So depending on weakness as to what cycle you start, if you do not have a year or more to do this. So basically, here's the deal. If you don't have a year to do this, doesn't matter what time of year it is, you should focus on what cycle focuses on your weakness. So if you're coming into this with a, let's say a new guy comes up to us and he's a cross country guy and he's planning on shipping in the fall, I would suggest to him, who's already crushed his PT test, to probably do a fall winter lift cycle between then and now. So he'd be doing a winter lift cycle all summer versus the spring summer cycle that most of my guys would be on, because he really needs to work on those strength cycles, strength and power numbers more than his endurance and muscle stamina numbers. The 3-to-1 block ratio is a perfect way to do that. You can still maintain your cardio and muscle stamina while you build your strength. So once again, these are some of the things that I've learned over the years, that you can't be so rigid in your training that because it's fall, you're going to start lifting, or because it's spring, we're going to start running, right? Not everybody needs to run that much. Some people just can afford to run maybe 20 miles a week, but focus on their strength. Like a cross-country runner doesn't need to be running 50 to 75 miles a week before he gets to Bud's. He can pull back all the way to 20 and still be really good and not be broken when he gets there. Whew. Okay, so progress running PT throughout the year each year. Yes. This is something that I learned over, you know, the hard way, is that it's hard to progress your running all year long, right? There just comes a point where you just hit a really big plateau and you're doing nothing but just grinding and you're working really hard to go nowhere, really. So go through a cycle where you actually have some downtime from running, and it makes the ups much better. And you can just maintain, focus on maintaining versus grinding it out and pushing it. Same goes through progress with lifting throughout the year, each year. You know, it's very hard to do strength cycles year after year after year. I mean, if you see the guys that do that, they're typically horrible at any cardio activity. And they're typically hurt, you know, somewhere in a joint or lower back is injured just from constant abuse of going heavy. So once again, we tend to just focus on cycling through a strength cycle in the fall and winter, or depending on the athlete, when needed. Up cycles and down cycles, run, lift, calisthenics. Yeah, just basically everything I was just saying. You know, our bodies respond better to versus staying flatlined at the top. It responds better to this little sine wave or bell curve, if you want, of activities of ups and downs and, you know, recovery time. And next thing you know, every time you do it, you're just a little bit higher and a little bit higher, and to the point where you're really good at everything, probably great at a couple of things, but really good at everything else. You know, it takes a while to do that. It takes a while to be able to say 5 miles is not long distance. You know, then it takes even longer to be able to say, you know what, I'm going to try to hit this 5 miles at 6 minute mile pace the whole time. You know, that's another big jump in your abilities, but you just can't get there and stay there, you know, running slow year after year after year and expect to get to that kind of speed and volume. You know, it does help to cycle through this, and every cycle you get a little bit better. So it takes time. Another thing, when you're young, it probably doesn't matter, but you can't outwork your diet and sleep no matter what age you are with sleep. With diet, I give you past 30, 35, you can probably outwork your diet. But there comes a time when you're no longer a hard gainer. And you're a hard loser, you know, after 40 for sure. And it's real easy to gain weight just by looking at food versus what you used to be able to do, eat whatever you wanted and never gain weight and still have a six pack. So that happens with age. But once again, if you're planning on doing this for a career, you have to accept that and understand that change will come as you age, and you will be older longer than you are younger in this profession. So something just to kind of put in the back burner right now, if you're in your 20s, but just know that sleep and nutrition are very important for not only your optimal performance, but later down the road in you being able to maintain a healthy weight and stress management as well. So what we say in this is you have to, no matter what your age, actively pursue recovery. That means every day you're doing something that's going to help you recover from the activity that you have just done, but also fuel yourself in preparation for the next activity. That's how important your nutrition and sleep are, because that's what you are actually doing. Whenever you eat and sleep, you are recovering from your previous challenges, you know, that you've just given yourself with training, and you're also preparing for the next challenge the next day. And if you're going through selection, it's even more important. You don't have time to play around with your diet and sleep. It's already going to be kind of crushed anyway. So you have to do whatever you can to supplement that with just good food and sleep whenever you can. Luckily at Buds, you get the weekends off, good time to lick your wounds, eat really good food, and, you know, come in Monday well rested. And that's a big win, you know, for you. And then last but not least, mobility days, you know, instead of doing, you know, no days off, which a lot of people do, I'd recommend taking a day off. And maybe even adding a mobility day in place of one of your normal hard days. So what we do right now, and I started doing this in my 40s because I needed it, but then even the younger guys were starting to join me with mobility day. And then they saw huge changes in their performance later in the week and with injury prevention as well. A lot fewer injuries coming out of it too. So we do a mobility day on either a Wednesday or a Thursday, depending on the cycle. Usually Wednesday if it's a strength training cycle, or Thursday if it's a running calisthenic cycle. Just because feel like you need it earlier when you're doing strength training. And basically a mobility day looks like this. You do 5 minutes of cardio, non-impact version recommended, followed by 5 minutes of stretching and foam rolling. And you repeat that five times in the course of an hour. And that is so good. I mean, you walk out of the gym and you don't feel any pain. You actually feel pretty good. You know, you need that. Then we usually follow it up with all of the drown proofing drills that you would normally do, treading water, bouncing, floating, travel, front flip, back flip, all the drown proofing. We simulate drown proofing, mix in some swimming in there just to work some cardio a little bit. And then we do final grand finale of our mobility day is 10 minutes chest deep water all the dynamic stretches that you can think of. Leg swings, back to front and back, side to side, karaoke's, running in place, jumping jacks in the deep end. You know, all of those are really good. And this is underwater, kind of holding your breath, doing jumping jacks. Really good for, you know, getting your hips and shoulders moving with a little bit of resistance, but it feels so good. So when I say take a mobility day, I don't mean take a day off. I mean, if you just listen to what I just said, that's going to take you an hour to, or at least an hour and 45 minutes to do all of that, especially if you add the swim session on after the non-impact cardio and stretching foam rolling session. Life-changing. And if you start it now and you continue to do it just once a week throughout your 30s and 40s, if you learn nothing from this demonstration today, from this PowerPoint, if you start doing that, I promise you it will change your life. And not only how you feel, but how you move, and with typical aches and pains kind of going away. I'm 52 right now. I've been doing mobility days once a week, sometimes twice a week for the last 7 years. Completely changed how I address my fitness now. Because at one point in my mid-40s, I was thinking, man, my hips hurt so bad, I may have to quit running and just do swimming. But I've been ran 20 miles a week last week as I'm ramping up. Feeling good, you know, no aches or pains. And I swear it's a mobility day. And then I do something a little on Sunday as well before getting ready for the week. But yes, these are some of the things that I have learned over the years. Some of equipment and tools, something you should also research is there's something called the functional movement screener. And if you get a really good trainer who's knows what he's doing, or her, what she's doing, you can actually go through this functional movement screening and just get a grade on all your joints and how they move through space. It's a great tool. It shows you where your mobility issues are, where your imbalances are, and you may be, for me, I have found that it's a great tool for seeing if I'm getting close to overreaching or overtraining, because whenever I am really feeling burned out, I can't pass a functional movement screening test the way I could initially. Like I have worse scores when I'm burned out. Hips don't work right. Knees don't feel right. You know, there's always something wrong with balance. Because it is a central nervous system issue when you are overtraining or overreaching. And the functional movement screener is a really good test of that central nervous system. So check that out. Google it. Watch some YouTube videos on it. Learn what the four exercises are and try it out on yourself. If you want to get really good scores on it or a really good assessment of it, actually get a professional to show you how to do it. There's some certifications out there for the screener that I would recommend looking into for yourself even, and testing your teammates as well. Mix in some aqua jogging and water cool downs for sure. That's very helpful as well. Anytime you finish a swim workout, practice some treading and just the dynamic stretches and chest deep water, aqua jogging, just movements underwater, make your joints feel really good. I'd highly recommend a foam roller, massage tools such as just a lacrosse ball, stick, bands, even the car buffer or Theragun type machines. You can get a car buffer pretty cheap. You know, you have to get an orbital car buffer. Ryobi makes one that's really good that I have. It does not spin, it just vibrates, but it vibrates at a nice therapeutic frequency, and it's only about $25. So it's probably going to be the cheapest thing in these recommendations, but it works. It's nice. crossballs are pretty inexpensive too, that are really good for trigger point massaging. Definitely work on some non-impact cardio options. You know, some guys who like triathlons, I think is really good, because two-thirds of that is non-impact cardio. You can be on a bike, you can be in a swimming pool, and you can not injure yourself doing this. Where people do, though, get injured, and this is one of those fine line between mental toughness, stupid workouts, a little common sense, is if you're 6 months out, you probably don't want to be on a bike on the open road, because you're taking your injuries and your life and your own to chance, because accidents happen at 20 miles an hour on a bike, whether it's a car that hits you or you fall head first into the ground. Those things happen, and I've seen people get hurt doing that. Weight vest, TRX, sandbags, weights. Yes, you gotta get something to make calisthenics a little bit harder, and help you build some strength. So that is kind of it on the tactical fitness portion. But my final comments on the fine line between mental toughness and stupidity is where people screw up the most, right? It's the guy who is, let's say 6 months out, maybe even less than 6 months out from going, and they've crushed everything so far. They're good enough at all those scores that I showed you, but they're questioning themselves. And this is absolutely normal to do, questioning whether or not they are mentally ready to do this. Natural thought process. But I promise you, if you've done all of that and you've gotten good at it, you've actually built some discipline and mental toughness up over the time it took to do that. And you've created good habits, which is discipline. You've added mental toughness every step of the day by waking up early, getting wet, going into the pool, cold days in the winter, going for a run. All of those things suck. And if you do them, even though you don't feel like doing them, you have just added in another notch of mental toughness. You know, it doesn't take a gut check that is way out of your range of training to do this. Like, there's nothing wrong with gut checks. I'm a firm believer in running a marathon if you want to test your abilities, but you should progress up to that distance. You know, endurance races, the same thing. Let me just give you a quick story. There was one guy that went to go run a 100-mile endurance race, and he hadn't really trained up for it. I think maybe he did a marathon a few months before, but never really trained up for that event. And he was doing it just as a gut check. I'm like, I don't think you need to do this. I think you're going to wind up hurting yourself, and it's just going to be a pain in the neck for you. Sure enough, he did it. Walked a little, ran a little, you know, wasn't any world-class numbers, but he got it done, and he got the little badge and has like, hey, good job. However, he hurt his foot. That caused him to not be able to run. Even though he did 100 miles that week, he did not run again for 2 months because he has stress fractures in his foot. So what I did is I was running about 100 miles a month at that time. So 25 miles a week gave me 100 miles a month. So I, even though he did 100 miles that weekend, I did 200 miles in the time that he could not run at all. So who's better off for that, right? I was able to still run twice as much as he was. Did he really get a gut check out of that? Maybe. But was it worth it? Because now you just had to take off 2 months from running, and you now have to rebuild to where you were because you got buds in another 2 months. So if you're going to do a gut check, make sure you have plenty of time to recover from that gut check. Fine line between mental toughness and stupid. That was on the stupid side. Another one was, had a MMA fighter who, well, he's just like Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and they would mix it up with MMA stuff. Wasn't a professional fighter at all, but he would have fun and spar and stuff like that. Well, this was about 4 months before Buds, and he breaks his hand throwing a punch, needs surgery on his hand. Well, if you've ever had surgery on your hand or an injury in your foot, you know both of them take a very long time before you can do anything again. So that was a recovery period as well. It was such a recovery period that he missed his date to go to Buds and had to bump it 6 months forward. Now, that may not sound like a big deal to you, but he's lucky he didn't get disqualified. Unfortunately, the third story in this series of stories is the guy who did get disqualified because he injured himself doing something stupid in a gut check challenge. It's just one of these endurance races. Once again, messed up his hip so bad, needed hip surgery, and disqualified himself for the Navy. I think he's still trying to now. It's been 2 years later. Surgery's fine. He's trying to get waivers for all that, and he still hasn't found out if he's going to be able to join the military or not. So that's what I mean by mentally tough or stupid. The other one is the final, I guess, part of this story is the guy who is the great runner or the great swimmer or the great lifter who is still trying to be great at those events that his athletic history makes him great at by working really hard on them to go crush something. You know, 4 mile time runs or 500 yard swims, you know, you will do one 500 yard swim at Buds to get into Buds. And that's it. You want to break that record? Great. No one cares a week later. And especially if you don't make it, they're just going to say he broke the Buds record, but he didn't even make it through log PT, because he broke. So that's what I'm saying. You don't want to get so great at one event that it causes an equal and opposite weakness in something else. So typically those relationships are guys who can swim really well, typically don't run very well, and anything gravity wise hurts them. Guys that run really well, typically don't lift very well. And then the guys that can lift very well usually can't run very well because they're just big and heavy. And then they have a third issue, or a second issue, is the obstacle course is a big issue for heavier guys because it's a lot of grip strength required to get through that thing. So you're 220 plus going through that, and you're going to have really hard time hanging on to some of those obstacles on the back end of that test. You may not pass it. And there are people who get kicked out of Buds for not passing the obstacle course test. Seen it recently a couple of times, actually. And 4 mile timed runs. Here's another one. Some guys that like to run, they run 50, 60 miles a week, but they run those 50, 60 miles too slow. So what good is it to run, you know, 10 or 12 miles in a weekend run when you're doing them at 9-10 minute mile pace? Even if you did them at 8 minute mile pace, that's not going to pass a 7 minute mile pace type run. Now, you might be able to get your 4 mile time run in 32, maybe even a little faster. But unfortunately, I have seen people go to Buds with 50, 60 miles a week under their belt prior to showing up, and they couldn't meet the 4 mile timed run pace time to pass. So what good is 50, 60 miles a week? I would rather you run 20, 25 miles a week at 6 and 7 minute mile pace. That's going to do you much better than 50 miles a week slow, because what that's going to do is just make you good at running slowly. And that does you no good at getting through Buds. So there you go. That's kind of tactical fitness and The fine line between mental toughness and stupidity all crammed into one little tactical fitness report. I hope it made sense. If you have questions, you can always email me, stu@stusmith.com. But, you know, most of everything that I've talked about, I've written about, whether it's in programs such as the ones behind me, or it's in article format. In fact, in the description below, I will put several articles in there. I have a full article on seasonal tactical fitness periodization, the block periodization lessons learned that we came from it, as well as some mental toughness and recovery articles as well that will help you with whatever weakness you're having in there. Then lots of swimming videos and swimming technique articles as well. So with that, I am signing off. Thanks for listening this long. If you want to go to stusmithfitness.com, use the special coupon code that I have right there. See that? It says COMPETE20. COMPETE20 will save you 20% on anything you order today. So get on it and let me know if you have any questions. Until next time, Stu Smith signing off. We'll see you.